Welcome to Principal Center Radio, bringing you the best in professional practice. Here's your host, director of the Principal Center and champion of high performance instructional leadership, Justin Bader.
Welcome everyone to Principal Center Radio. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and I'm honored to be joined today by Dr. Dallas Dance. Dr. Dance is a leadership consultant and former school superintendent known for his educational technology and leadership development initiatives. He holds a PhD in educational leadership from Virginia Commonwealth University, and he's the author of the new book, Deliberate Excellence: Three Fundamental Strategies That Drive Educational Leadership, which we're here to talk about today.
And now, our feature presentation.
Dr. Dance, welcome to Principal Center Radio.
Good morning, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Great to speak with you today. Let's talk about what those three fundamental strategies are. And I wonder if we could start by kind of giving people a little bit of the backstory on the work that those strategies came out of. I know you have a lot of experience as a school superintendent and central office leader of instructional leaders. So what was some of the work that led up to this book?
You know, one of the things that I've always been very, very passionate about, and it's my background, I've been living it for almost nearly two decades in education, is just leadership in general. And so when I thought to pen this book, one of the things I thought about was the most gratifying position I ever held was that of being a school principal. It was your staff, your community, your students. And how do you then take that up to the ranks of becoming a district leader and ultimately a superintendent, where you recognize that the most influential position in a school is that of the principal. The most important are that of the teachers. But in order to move work forward, it's going to require leadership. And to move work forward requiring leadership, I started to think about, with the nearly two decades of experience I had, what were three fundamental things that has always driven me to get things done, to where when I left an organization, regardless of the time I was there, the work continued to move through people. And so one of the first principles that we thought about was this whole idea of equity for people in general, whether it was students where you made decisions based on every single kid as if they were your own child that was impacted by that decision, or whether it was equity based on how you treated your employees and provided the professional development that they needed in order to get work done. There's this fundamental belief that if there is a keen focus and intense awareness around equity and equity work, that work moves forward from a leadership lens. The second principle, Justin, really was this whole idea that leaders have to deal with change and understanding how to manage that change. And it's all about this whole concept of who moved my cheese. And I think we all remember reading that book and understanding what it meant for us personally. But when you want to push forward a change agenda and understand how to manage that, you have to understand how to work with people, how to understand people, how to relate to people, and how do you make sure that through people that work gets done. And then the last principle, which is most importantly, and I think education, we don't really do a really good job of this, is this whole idea of communicating. We do the work. We don't tend to think through what our internal or external stakeholders are thinking about how we communicate that. But if you don't communicate the equity work or the change work you're trying to get done, or even the purpose and the awareness to why you're trying to get that done, nothing happens. So in a very quick read, the reader will have an opportunity to really think through over my experience as a teacher, as a principal, as a central office administrator, and ultimately as a superintendent, and even as an adjunct professor at a university level for multiple universities, different things that have happened that have worked, that have not worked, lessons that I've learned as I go through leadership coaching and executive coaching now, things that have worked for individuals who I coach, things that did not work with their permission has been published. And so they'll really get an idea how to relate this to themselves, to those three fundamental principles.
Well, Dallas, I wonder if you could give us a little bit of a personal perspective on equity. What is it that equity means to you personally, and how does that show up in our work as educational leaders?
So, Justin, for me, I always am asked, and I have an opportunity now, I'm very fortunate to work with school districts and systems all across the country, internationally and within the domestic United States. And they always say, okay, what is equity? We always hear this conversation. What is it? And I boil down equity to one simple statement, and this is making the decision for every single kid the same way you would make it for your own kid. And when we bring it personally, and I always like to tell people, you know, before I became a dad, I was impatient. When I became a dad, I knew that the stakes were even higher, and I wanted every single kid to have the same opportunity as my 8-year-old son right now. But when you drill down to an equity agenda, this is really looking at the policies, the practices, what are those structures that are in place that in many cases are exacerbating the achievement gap as opposed to closing them. You know, in education, we like to think about some of the issues and concerns that we have. But when we think about the real work, Justin, whether you're a building principal or whether you're a district leader, whether you're a PTA member or a school board member, 90% of the things that we deal with in education, we can solve as the people leading and doing the work in education. But in many cases, it takes hard work. it takes, you know, addressing systemic bias and systemic racism that has existed to where, you know, black, brown students who are living in poverty, students who are receiving special education services or English language learners, they're not getting the same types of experiences or the same types of opportunities as all students are in the system. And in many cases, these are not things that we're doing intentionally. These are just things that within the system, it has actually not been addressed just yet. Prime example is staffing, and I'm working with the school system right now who are really having some conversations around staffing because 85% of a school system's budget traditionally is the people. It's the salaries and the benefits of your most valuable asset, your employees. But how we deploy our employees, our best principals, our best teachers, we determine that. So our students who are in many cases two, three, unfortunately in some cases four grade levels behind, are they getting access to those best teachers? You know, are they getting access to our best leaders? Those are questions that systemically we can ask, and these are things where policy-wise we can drive that conversation. I was very fortunate in Baltimore County because I had a board, and this happened in Houston too, but I had a very dedicated board who said, you know, we're going to address equity, and we're going to start by having an equity policy. And I had board members who drove that. And so with an equity policy that says to the superintendent, we are going to back you on getting work done that closes the achievement gap. And we're not talking about closing it where you bring people to the middle. We're talking about where you eliminate this gap. And we were fortunate enough that we were able to do the work. And in the book, I talk about some of the gaps that were closed, whether it was graduation rates, whether it was reading, whether it was kindergarten preparedness or third grade reading. I talk about the team and how we were able to do that. But equity is really getting to that core belief that I'm going to make a decision as if my own child was impacted. And as I think about education across the country right now and internationally, I think equity is the core work that's going to drive our nation and our schools over the next, at least next 5 to 10 years.
Well, Dr. Dance, I really appreciate your personal perspective there, that asking ourselves that question, what would I want for my child? And is what I am overseeing right now as a leader for other kids, would that be good enough for my kid? I think that's a great question for us to reflect on. And another piece that I want to highlight from your previous comments there is this idea that equity is our responsibility, but it's not something that happens naturally. Like the systems that we inherit often are not configured equitably. And one specific example that I know is a pattern in far too many school districts is just what you said, staffing, that the most competent people, the highest performing people, the people who have the fewest challenges that they're facing in their lives tend to gravitate toward the highest socioeconomic schools, toward the schools where the students need them kind of the least. And it ends up being a human resources struggle to get highly qualified people into the schools where students need them most. So what are some strategies that you've seen to work effectively in the school systems that you've worked in or the school systems that you've consulted with to make sure that every school and that every student, and especially our highest need students, have access to the leadership that they need, to the teaching that they need, and that the staff in every school is highly qualified to meet their needs?
Justin, phenomenal question. And as readers go throughout the book, they'll see where the chapters will weave themselves together, where when we're talking about equity, we're also talking about change and understanding change management. We're talking about equity, not only we're talking about change, but how you communicate that. And so I think one of the biggest things that have been successful in school systems that I've been in, but also school systems that I have the opportunity to partner with right now, is this whole idea that when we engage with each other, we get into a mutually agreed upon partnership where your goals are our goals. When you win, we win. And at the end of the day, that's meaning that kids win. And a large part of this is building the cause for awareness of why. Why is it that we have achievement gaps within our school system? And I think any school system that does this work that tends to remove themselves from what student achievement data look like, I think that's where we run into problems with having this tough conversation around equity, because it is tough. Because when you have conversations around equity, we are going to dive deeply, Justin, into race. We're going to obviously get into the achievement gap and disparities that exist between students of color and non-students of color. But then we're going to go into students living in poverty, students who are receiving disability services, students who are English language learners, and students who fall into multiple categories. But it ultimately is going to be the intersection between race and achievement. So when that happens, we got to have an honest conversation around how do we put a culture in place. And culture underlines the entire work in the book. Culture underlines all the work that I do with school systems or principals now. Because if the culture is built to where we can be ourselves and that we are going to make sure we all are learning and that we all are going to make sure we have a stake and responsibility in moving all student achievement outcomes and data forward, then everyone understands that it's their responsibility and everyone begins to take ownership. Anyone who's had a tough conversation around equity understands that if the calls for awareness in the communication avenue is not in place first, it's not going to be successful. So when I remember going back to when I did the work in Houston under the leadership of Terry Greer, when I became a superintendent in Baltimore County myself, we spent a lot of time just asking ourselves internally, what do we need to do in terms of messaging so that folks understand why this was so important to us? Why is it that we are going to be excited and issue a press release when the Schott Foundation said that 2/3 of our African-American male students are graduating on time? And we're excited by that. We are excited by the fact that 1/3 of our African-American males are not graduating on time. That's a problem. So when we build that cause for awareness that that's a problem, then we start thinking systemically, what do we need to do to change and to fix this? Whether it's policies, whether it's practices, whether it's looking at systemic structures that might be in place. But I think one of the biggest things that school systems who decide to partner with our group decide that we can help them with is truly this hard conversation about where do we get started? And ultimately, what do we want the ending to be? Because circling around all of that, Justin, is this idea around staffing. Again, I mentioned it, 80% of that budget to 85% are all people. But when we build a cause for awareness of why our best teachers need to be with students who need them the most, we then move on to other things that we need to put in place. I mean, teachers go into this work because they want to help kids, but teachers need resources too. So how then do we take our staffing but make sure that funding is in place to support those schools? How then do we have conversations around, we know that throughout the summer, there's a summer slide for students who are living in poverty who don't have access to learning opportunities. How then do we access resource opportunities and funding opportunities to close that summer slide gap? And we compensate teachers and provide them with the resources and support to do that. And at the end of the day, we still leverage leadership through our principals and our central office administrators to support them in doing that work too. Throughout my work in Houston and Baltimore, I was a big advocate of technology. And so in the book, we do talk about how equity and change and how communication evolved around some of the technology initiatives that I did in the work that I've done in several school systems, because it's my core belief that access to technology, particularly technology of the era that we're in now, and even as we look at future technology in the next, you know, 5 years, where we're looking at advances in AI and advances in personalized and adaptive technologies, when we think about that, this gives us the opportunity to eliminate achievement gaps before kids even get to school. And so, yes, I talk about how access to technology can provide as a resource to schools where students traditionally have not done well, but it does not, you know, get rid of the work of teachers. It supplements the work of teachers by allowing an additional resource. But what we decide to do is start early on building the cause for awareness, starting early on, what's our end goal related to student achievement outcomes? And then how do we systemically get there? This problem did not happen overnight. It won't be fixed overnight, but there are some pretty intense things we can do early on to build a cause for awareness and get the work moving quickly.
And I know we don't always have, you know, the power to change everything about kids' lives and the factors that they face outside of school and before they start school. But I think technology is a great example of kind of an equalizer that we can take responsibility for as leaders. And I know in a lot of your roles, you've been a big advocate of kind of one-to-one technology. Is that right?
I have been a big advocate for that. And just because if we think about equity, when it's one-to-one, every single student has his or her own. They have access to it. You know, as an adult, you know, we do our best work in many cases in the evenings. We do it on weekends. How do we create an environment where students are learning throughout, you know, their time, but they also are learning things they want to learn, but also things that we need to make sure they know and be able to do.
Yeah, and it's so many of those skills that kids develop with information literacy and learning how to look things up, how to learn on their own. You know, those are skills that develop not just within the school day, but, you know, throughout their lives, and access makes such a huge difference. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And I wonder if we could also talk about the idea of leadership pipelines, this idea that if we want to have excellent leadership in every school, that's not necessarily going to just happen by accident. You know, in a lot of the most successful systems where we see high quality leadership in every school, it's not that just great people happen to have shown up and happen to have applied for the right jobs. It's that deliberate actions have been taken to ensure that every school has a highly qualified applicant pool, and that school can choose leaders and can choose teachers who have been thoroughly prepared for that specific kind of work. So I wonder if you could talk about that for a moment. What have you seen to be effective in developing leadership pipelines?
Great question, because that's the core of what we do at the DDANS group right now. One of the biggest things I always was asked as a superintendent, what keeps you up at night? And again, I go back to the fact that, you know, I led a business of $1.9 billion that had teaching and learning at its core. 83% of that budget was people, salaries and benefits. So the capacity of individuals to do the job was paramount to me and my thinking. I knew as a superintendent, I had 173 schools and 173 principals that even if I said at central office, we need to do something, I needed to make sure capacity was built and support was given to them in order to be able to do the work. If we think about nationally, the landscape of the principalship has changed even from when I did it back in 2005. When we think about the next 5 years, you're going to have about 40% of the principals across our country for various reasons no longer be in the role. We can all recognize that certification programs at the university level are not producing the quality of administrative experience and background that we need. And even if you take the number of folks who are going to leave those preparation programs with their certifications, we still are missing the number that we need in terms of the gap. So in order for school systems to do their work and do it well over the next 5 and 10 years, they're going to have to grow their own. In many cases, what our clients will do is they will bring me and my team in, Justin, to help them develop that pipeline. But before we start developing anything is looking at an internal assessment of what do the data show in terms of our leadership offerings right now? How are we preparing and supporting our folks right now? What do our data show us in terms of the number that we're going to need over the next 1, 3, 5, and 10 years? And how then do we put systemic structures in place to where we have a pipeline that not just recruits and selects leadership at the building and central office level, but we support them. And so when we do leadership development efforts, we then take what best practices and research and practical experience has called for us. So these are simulations and opportunities that principals will have from day one to do the job. But we also mirror that with what the district's doing right there with their strategic plan and their work of the future to make sure that it's personalized and customized to that system. In addition to that, we then will pair this with leadership coaching. And as a certified executive coach, I've had to make the case to so many boards, superintendents, that one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Tom Brady, has a quarterback coach. Best people in doing their jobs have coaches. I had a coach. I still have a coach right now. And so principals, superintendents, district leaders, and school-based leaders, we all need coaches to do the job. How then do we mirror the work that the coach is doing with the work that the school system is doing? Because at the end of the day, organizations are successful because of leadership and because of people. Yep. And sustainable leadership is what our organizations need, and that's the work that we do.
Well, Dallas, one of the things that I know really had a big impact on my career was the opportunity to have an intermediate role. And in my school, it was called head teacher, and it was really kind of a dean of students position. Didn't require an admin certificate, but really gave me the opportunity to step into that world of leadership, to step out of the classroom and to really focus full time on the system and working with students and working on school level systems. And it also served as my internship. And I know that districts are often looking for ways to create those principal pipelines, to create those leadership pipelines without necessarily just writing a big check for some kind of standalone program. You know, we want those leadership development programs to also serve student needs in the meantime. So I'm very grateful that I got to have one of those positions where I was doing important work on behalf of the school. The school needed me to do those things, but it was also great leadership development experience for me. And I'm wondering your thoughts on some of those leadership development experiences that districts can create, because it's certainly possible to have an intermediate role like that that doesn't really prepare you for the next level, but that just kind of, uses you for your time and your talents at that level, maybe dealing with student discipline. But I know that the people who are in those intermediate roles are probably our best pool of future leaders at the principal level or at the central office level. And as I'm working with new administrators or aspiring administrators, one of the frustrations that I hear from a lot of people is, well, I had this interview, I did great, but I lost out to an internal candidate. You know, there was someone who was already kind of handpicked, ready for that job, and I went in for an interview and I really didn't have a chance. And what I'll say to my coaching clients is I'll say, you know, I know that's frustrating, but consider it good experience for you and have respect for the organizations that are smart enough to set themselves up that way, to not have to hire blindly, but to really know going into an open position, having people who have been groomed, who've been prepared, who've been trained, who've been mentored, who are ready to step into those positions. And my message is always, you know, if you have an internal candidate, that is fabulous. That is a smart district that has those internal candidates who are ready to go. And it's not that other people don't get a fair shot, but it's that we are prepared as a system when we have an opening. So I wonder, what are some of the effective things that you've seen districts do to kind of prepare people for those next level roles?
So Justin, what you're talking about is leadership pipelines. And when school systems decide to work with us, we traditionally partner for a 3-year period because we believe at the end of 3 years, you will have an opportunity now where you can do this and sustain it on your own. But it's about building the pipeline from the principalship up and down. So when we start, you know, talk about building the pipeline from the principalship down, we talk about all those aspects of teacher leadership. You know, we're working with the school system right now on redefining what their job responsibilities and job descriptions are for team leaders and department chairs. And how do you give them an opportunity for, you know, other traditional aspects outside of leading the team or the department meeting? Because it goes way beyond that. Then we also are looking at how do you make sure that as teachers, some of our best teachers, they want to coach and do leadership, but they also want to have a connection to the classroom. How do you have teacher leadership roles, whether it's an administrative aide, which I was able and fortunate to do in Henrico County, where I taught full time, but I also was an administrator on my planning, on my duty period, whether it's an administrative intern, whether it is a teacher coach position, whatever we decide to call it, it's an opportunity for folks to still touch kids through their teaching of kids, but also still touch kids through their coaching and teaching of other adults within the building too. We're also working with the school system right now who wants to redefine the role of the assistant principal. You know, one of the pieces of feedback I always get from people when they reach the principal's chair is, I never knew that, or I never knew this. And there are parts of the job, as you know, you're not going to know, but it should never be where we sort of pegged our assistant principals to only know one thing. And in many cases, that is discipline. How then do we redefine the role of the assistant principal to where one system that I'm working with right now, they actually have a dean of students position who they don't do anything, but they work with counselors and they work with the administration of discipline for students. So assistant principals are then freed up to really understand deeply what they need to know and be able to do around instructional leadership, which is the core of the work that we want principals to be able to do. And then if you take the role of the principal up, you know, as a superintendent, one of the things I recognized very early is that the principalship is an extension of the superintendent. And how do you make sure that whether it's your principal supervisors, and there are a lot of districts right now who are doing some work around there, and we're in negotiations with one right now to support their work around that. Principal supervisors, the Department of Professional Development, Department of Curriculum and Instruction, all of these positions are positions that support the role of the principal. But many times, great principals, when they go into those roles, they forget that they're no longer principals. This is now an opportunity to coach and work with principals around the work that they're doing. And so I believe that it's important, particularly over a 3-year period, Justin, for school systems to build systems to where from the teacher to the teacher leadership role to the assistant principal, ultimately to the principal, all the way up to the superintendent, there are avenues and structures in place. Now, to your later question, which talked about sort of, you know, going through the interview and the internal candidate having sort of the advantage over the external candidate, I always like to remind my superintendent coaching clients that there's always this 80-20 rule. And this whole idea that you want to build systems in place to where 75 to 80% of your hires are internal because they have gotten an opportunity to understand the strategic direction that's in place in the school system. They've now lived it and breathed it in several different roles within the school system. And now they can move into another position already having the institutional knowledge. But there is 20% that we need to make sure that organizations always remain on top of their goal and their game by bringing in new ideas into the organization. If an organization is just constantly having the same ideas from within the organization, you're going to, you know, see pretty clearly the end is in mind, as Jack Welch said. So how then do we make sure that out of 80% of the people we're hiring, they're within the system, 20% we're bringing in new innovative ideas? And what I'd like to do a lot of times with school systems is we identify individuals who are, you know, prime candidates for leadership positions in other systems. We bring them in for a 1-year period. We then coach and develop them in terms of our aspiring pipeline. And then within 1 year, Justin, they move into a bigger leadership role within that school system. That's huge. But lastly, I always have to remind my clients, just be honest with individuals too. People can take the feedback when you're honest with them. And so it's a little disingenuous to have an interview process that's a full-blown process. And individuals think that, you know, it is an equal playing field. And in some cases that it's not. But I would also tell people, don't be discouraged by an opportunity to interview with the system, not get it, Because if that interview was as stellar as you believe it is and that the system thinks that it may be, then there's an opportunity for future work within that system because they've already gotten a chance to get to know you. That second time could be the charm.
Well, Dr. Dance, it has been a pleasure to talk with you about leadership pipelines and equity and everything else that we've covered today. If people want to get in touch with you and learn more about your work and about your book, Deliberate Excellence, where's the best place for them to find you online?
Sure. And Justin, I'll tell you this as we close. This has actually been so much fun being able to get back into doing the work with principals and superintendents. If individuals want to get in touch with us at the DeDance Group, they can find us online at www.thedancegroup.com. That is two D's, dedancegroup.com. They can also reach us at 804-288-5627. They can also send us an email at info@thedancegroup.com. Information about the book is posted on that website, and there's a link to the book where they can go on Amazon to pre-order that book right now, which will be released in mid-January by Corwin Press.
So again, the book is Deliberate Excellence, Three Fundamental Strategies That Drive Educational Leadership. Dr. Dance, thanks so much for joining me on Principal Center Radio. It's been a blast.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And now, Justin Bader on High Performance Instructional Leadership.
So, high-performance instructional leaders, what did you take away from my conversation with Dallas Dance? I really enjoyed talking about leadership pipelines because I think it's something that doesn't happen by itself. For a district to intentionally say, how can we end up with the kind of leaders that we really want to have? It requires action. It requires planning. It requires investment. It requires thinking about the experiences and the skills that we want people to have, and then creating the opportunity for our best people to gain those experiences and develop those skills. And again, I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity to do my internship while working as kind of a dean of students, as a head teacher in an elementary school, because I know that prepared me far better than, say, a brief unpaid internship would have. I was able to be in that position for 2 years, making, you know, kind of a teacher salary in that role, making a difference for the school. But there were also intentional efforts to develop me as a leader. And I'm very grateful for the mentorship and the coaching that I received. And I think one of the things that we touched on in our conversation in this podcast that I think is a risk in those positions is that people get pigeonholed as doing only one kind of work for the school. For example, discipline. Dallas mentioned discipline as being something that often assistant principals get stuck with, and then as a result, they're not involved in the work of instructional leadership. So I want to caution you against over-specializing in your admin roles. And I really want to encourage you to look at the work of leadership holistically and to say, this is something that we share broadly. Instructional leadership is not just for the principal. It is also for the assistant principal. It is also for the instructional coach. It is also for our teacher leaders. It is a shared responsibility that none of us can do alone. None of us can fulfill that responsibility completely by ourselves. And when we're willing to go the extra mile to share that work and to develop that capacity among our team, the work is done more effectively, and we have a more robust and resilient leadership team. So if the principal is out sick for a while, if the principal goes on leave, or if the principal moves to a new school, there is a solid bench in place of players who can step up and say, well, I am ready to take on that mantle of instructional leadership. So I really want to encourage you to take the time, take the effort to invest in instructional leadership, not just at the top, but on the way there. For people who are aspiring administrators, for people who are future administrators, and if you are a school district that is looking to help people who maybe are currently in the classroom start thinking about instructional leadership as a career path for themselves, I want to let you know about our High Performance Instructional Leadership Certification Program. This is an online program that supplements, say, a master's of administration or a master's degree that comes with a state principal certification. What I wanted to do in this program, and what I think we've done very successfully, is give people the mindsets and the skills specifically to be instructional leaders even before or after they're in that administrative role. So this is a program that is highly effective for central office leaders who supervise principals, as well as current administrators, as well as aspiring administrators, because it focuses on helping teachers change their practice. Often we think about the administrative tasks that we have to do. We think about teacher evaluation, but we don't really think in human development terms and in professional learning terms about how to actually help teachers change their practice. So that is what the High Performance Instructional Leadership Certification Program is all about. And if you're interested in that at the district level, we have some great options for enrolling groups. And you can find out more about that at principalcenter.com/district.
Thanks for listening to Principal Center Radio. For more great episodes, subscribe on our website at principalcenter.com/radio.